Welcome to Your Move with Andy Stanley. In his weekly 30-minute podcast, you will discover how to make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. So check out our website at yourmove.is for additional ways to watch, download, and share this message. Today is the first part in the two-part series entitled Thrill of Hope. Do you remember as a child what it was like enduring those days before Christmas? It was the anticipation that made Christmas, Christmas. There's always been a sense of anticipation around it, and the first Christmas was no different. In this series, Andy explains why the anticipation is needed and what happens during the waiting that is so important.
I imagine if we were to compare notes in terms of our experience, our Christmas experience as adults, they would be very, very different. But I imagine if we compared our experiences as children, they would have a lot in common. And the agonizing wait for Christmas and counting down the days to Christmas. And if your parents might have had a calendar. We had this little thing that we spin over every day that counts down the days to Christmas. And do you remember as a kid, just the agonizing, it just took forever for Christmas to be here. And the few days right before Christmas were like the longest days of the year. And then you become an adult and somebody says it's 3 weeks to Christmas and you panic. Isn't it weird? The other day I heard it's 3.5 weeks or something to Christmas Eve, and I'm like, oh no. And the kids are going, oh yeah. And I'm going, oh no, it's going too fast. And they're going, it's going too slow. But when we were kids, it was so slow. And the great thing was, no matter how slow it went and no matter how long it seemed to take till we got to Christmas, we always got there, right? There was the promise of the certainty of Christmas morning. And during that time, we all probably did something else in common. How many of you, it's confession time and won't leave the room, how many of you actually searched for the gifts your parents had hidden in the house? Did you search? Okay. Next question. How many of you found them at some point? You found them? Yeah. Okay. Third question. For the rebels, how many of you actually got them out and played with them? Yep. Yeah. And then final question. How many of you ever got one out, played with it, and you broke it? Yeah, and then what do you do with that, right? It's like, do you rewrap it? Do you, what, you know, oh, mom, it's broken. You know, yeah, I remember the year I got my guitar for Christmas from my parents, and they hid it in the attic. Which, you know, how do you hide a guitar case, right? We had a little house and just one of those pull-down attic where you pull the stairs down out of the ceiling and the insulation pours down on you. You know, got one of those. And so I'd climb up in the attic, and when my parents were gone, and I would actually get the guitar out and play it in the attic. Freezing cold, December, up in the attic. They should have had a wooden guitar up there anyway, but I would sit in the attic, play, and then listen, see if they're home, play, listen, see if they're home, you know, try to get all the pink insulation out of the case, put it back in, you know, remember that? Well, the interesting thing, that dynamic of waiting, is the dynamic actually that set up the very first Christmas. You may know this, or this may be new information, but for generation, many generations, there was always a handful or a group or a remnant of Jewish people who waited every single day for the arrival, not of Santa Claus, but of a Messiah. That every single generation, there was a group of people, and they lived their lives, literally, they lived their lives every single day in obedience to God's command, knowing that this could be the day that the Messiah arrives. But unlike the certainty of our Christmas, this went on for generation after generation after generation, and nothing happened. That 99.999% of these people who waited and waited and waited for the coming of Messiah died, and there was no fulfillment of that promise. And they prayed, and they waited, and they remained faithful. And while many of the Jews kind of peeled off into other things and abandoned their faith and thought it must have been a fairy tale and a myth, and who in the world would devote their lives to a story that's, you know, a couple of thousand years old, or a promise that's a couple of thousand years old, there was always a group that got up every day and lived as if this could be the day that the Messiah shows up. Today, as we begin this Christmas series, I want to introduce you to two of those people. And if you have your Bibles and want to follow along, we're going to be in the book of Luke, Matthew, Mark, Luke chapter 1, beginning in verse, 5. And as you find that, here's why this is so relevant for us. Because at some point in your Christian experience, if you haven't had this already, you will eventually. In fact, you'll have it more than one time. At some point in our Christian experience, God is so quiet, and God is so inactive, and God is so seemingly silent that there will be times in our lives when we'll look around and say, why am I doing this? You know, why am I attending? Why am I serving? Why am I giving? Why am I believing? Why am I obeying? Why am I missing out? Why am I not moving in? Why am I not taking the money? Why am I not running off? You know, why in the world am I continuing just day after day after day to live my life as if there's something bigger than me? There's something to the Bible. There's something to all this stuff. You know, am I just following along because my parents, you know, taught me this? Is this just my fear that if I do something, you know, if I abandon my faith or abandon my walk with God, whatever that is, that somehow it's not going to go well for me? Is this more of a superstition than something I really believe? And at some point in all of our lives, there are seasons, there are years, there are certainly periods of our life where, you know, in our attempt to be faithful and, quote, good Christian people, we look around and say, but what am I getting out of this? I mean, where is this going? Is there anything really to this? And if you've ever had that thought, that question, or maybe you're in one of those periods of doubt right now, the Christmas story is for you. In fact, the Christmas story around the two characters that we're going to look at today, in some way, is your story and is my story. Here's how it begins. Luke chapter 1, verse 5. In the time of Herod, that'd be the Herod that, you know, killed all the babies in Bethlehem. In the time of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah, who belonged to the priestly division of Abijah. His wife Elizabeth was also a descendant of Aaron, which meant that Elizabeth and Zechariah were both from the priestly line of Israel, which means basically they were preachers' kids, whose were preachers' kids. Their great-great-grandfather was a preacher. Their great-great-great-great-grand. In other words, they had just come from a long line of basically what we would consider religious, holy religious leaders or priests. They belonged to that line. Anyway, both of them, this is kind of where we pick up some tension in the story. Both of them were righteous in the sight of God, which meant in this context that the writer Luke believed that when God looked at these two people, he went, they're doing it right. They're doing it right. Look at the way they live. They're doing everything right. Observing all the Lord's commands. And if you've read the Old Testament, that's a lot. I mean, we don't even like to read through all that stuff. It's so complex. And yet here's a couple that was doing it right. All the Lord's commands and decrees blamelessly. That is, if you sent a private investigator to follow these two around, there would be nothing to tell. Blamelessly. And here's what's amazing. They were doing what they were doing as priests and as followers of God based on promises that had been given a couple of thousand years earlier. And for the last 700 years, God had done nothing for the nation of Israel. And yet these two get up day after day after day and live their lives as if Christmas is coming. Live their lives as if actually a Messiah is coming. Live their lives as if God is actually going to keep his promise and fulfill his promise. And again, there's no evidence that God's going to do any of that. And yet they're blameless. And so we want to peer into their lives and say, so Zechariah, Elizabeth, all this blameless, righteous, you're just such good people. How's that working out for you? Look at the next verse. They were childless because Elizabeth was not able to conceive. Oh, that's great. So let me get this straight. You're just getting up day after day after day waiting for the Messiah, serving in the temple, being good people, missing out on opportunities. And this God that you're so faithful to leaves you without an heir, without kids. In this culture, it was always the woman's fault. In this culture, women always got the blame, never men, because there was no medical, they didn't know. All they knew was that a woman couldn't get pregnant. And as important as it is in our culture for a woman to have a baby, in this culture, and this, I don't mean this to be offensive, in this culture, that's about all a woman was considered good for. They had no political standing. They generally couldn't work. They were almost always uneducated. And not only that, there was this religious stigma that God granted children to women and God decided who had children and who didn't, and which babies lived and which babies died. And so for a woman not to be able to get pregnant, there was a sense in which God had chosen to curse her for some unknown reason. And so Elizabeth, this righteous woman who lived blameless before God throughout her young years, her middle years, and in her latter years, wasn't going to happen for her. In fact, look how this statement ends. And they were both well advanced in years. It was over. It was too late. There was, God had done nothing for them lately. And we find out later in the story that they had prayed. They had prayed the desperate prayers of any couple who wants to have a child. And God had said no. And Elizabeth lived with the shame and the pain of this all the way into her old age. Now, here's what's so ridiculous about that. Their faithfulness to God, follow this, and if you're new to Bible study, I'm about to give you an Old Testament survey here real quick so you can listen to this. Their entire faithfulness to God was based on a promise made to Abraham 2,000 years earlier. I mean, this is really ridiculous. 2,000 years ago from now, 2,000 years ago from when they lived in the first century, 2,000 years previously, God had supposedly appeared to Abraham, and here's what God said to Abraham. He said to Abraham, I will make you into a great nation, which, okay, that actually happened, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and okay, that happened. Most of you had heard of Abraham before you got here today. That was 4,000 years ago, but here's where it starts to break down. And you will be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and for a while that happened, and I will curse those who curse you, and we're still trying to figure that one out, and I will curse, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you, you being Abraham. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you. And so this was kind of the root idea of why the Jews believed that there was something more for Israel. Because if you know the story, after God gave Abraham this promise, he finally had a son who had a son who had a bunch of sons who moved to Egypt, who became a nation, the nation of Israel. And then they moved back to their land, you know, the promised land. And then they became a kingdom and things really took off. And it looked like maybe during the age of this kingdom that God was going to bless all the peoples of the earth through the lineage of Abraham, that maybe this was how the promise was going to be fulfilled. And there was David, and then there was the golden age of Israel through Solomon, and things were absolutely incredible. And if ever there was a time for God to leverage the nation of Israel to bless all the peoples of the earth, it was during the time of Solomon, because after that, everything fell apart. The nation split. There were wars. There were good kings. There were bad kings. And between the time of Solomon's followers up until the time that Zechariah and Elizabeth lived, the nation of Israel, check this out, changed hands over 25 times. And many, 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 many Jews during that time turned away from temple worship, turned away from their belief in God, became those who integrated into Greek life and Roman life because after all, it was over. But not everybody, and not Zechariah, and not Elizabeth. And if you had come to them at that time and said, dear friends, it's over. It's a myth. It's not going to happen. It can't happen. Yes, part of Abraham's promise came true. There was a nation, and yes, people know the name Abraham, but Israel will never rise again on the scene of world events. Israel will never be a player. Nothing could possibly come from this little itty-bitty, dusty part of the Roman Empire that's going to impact the world. Give it up. Walk away. Enjoy the remaining few years of your life. Because God, if there ever was a God, has abandoned you. And if we had whispered that into their ear during these difficult years of their golden years, we would have been wrong. Because the reason Luke begins his story with this story is because this was the beginning of something brand new that would ultimately result in the fulfillment of God's promise to Abraham. And the reason this story is so important to you and is so important to me is because, as I said earlier, there are moments, there's periods, there's seasons of our lives and our relationships when we wonder, is God active? Is God listening? Does God care? And on Christmas, the answer is a resounding yes. Here's how the story goes on. Once when Zechariah's division was on duty and he was serving as priest before God, he was chosen by lot, according to the custom of the priesthood, to go into the temple of the Lord and burn incense. So essentially, there are 23 groups of priests. They cast lots, or basically they gamble, to decide who's going to be chosen. So this is something that may happen once in a lifetime for a priest. He's chosen, and he goes into the place where he stands right outside the curtain that divides the outer temple from the Holy of Holies. He stands right outside the Holy of Holies where God dwells. Everybody else vacates that part of the temple, and he offers incense to God. It's a very, very sacred occasion and an honor to be chosen. They believe that God was in the casting of lots to choose which priest would have this honor. And when the time for the burning of incense came, all the assembled worshipers were praying outside. So he's in there all by himself. Then an angel of the Lord appeared to him standing at the right side of the altar of incense. So he's in there kind of doing this thing, just another day in the life of a priest, trying to be faithful. And suddenly an angel of the Lord appears. And when Zechariah saw him, he was startled and was gripped with fear. Check this out. But the angel said to him, and this is the standard angel response, okay? If you've read the New Testament and the Old Testament, the angels, they just go ahead and get this out of the way. Now, the reason angels have to start their conversations with "do not be afraid" is because when people see an angel there, yeah, see, when I hear stories, modern day stories of, oh, and then an angel appeared, and I'm like, I don't think so. Because when an angel appeared and we had a conversation and it was so nice and I saw a light, I'm going, not a Bible angel. So when Bible angels appear, everybody falls on their face. They think they're seeing God. They don't know. It's just, I mean, angels, Bible angels are big and powerful and they're scary. Even when they're not trying to be scary, they're scary, you know? And, you know, people say all the time, I wish God would speak to me. And I'm like, I don't know if I really want God to speak. You know, I read the Bible. It's like, it's so terrifying. Even when God like turns it down to a one, it's still terrifying, okay? Because God is God. And so this angel appears, and this angel has good news, and still Zechariah's like, "Woo, it's an angel, and he's a good man." Imagine if it were you, you know? Okay? He didn't even have anything to be afraid about, okay? You know, your angel appears to you, you just start confessing stuff. It's like, I didn't mean to, and I always thought, and I promised, and it's like, shut up, okay? Here's some good news, okay? Okay, and so here's what the angel says. Your prayer, this is awesome. Your prayer has been heard. I would like to just hear that sometime, wouldn't you? Not that your prayer is going to be answered. I would just like a confirmation every once in a while an angel would appear, and, you know, a small angel, you know? Maybe like a servant of an angel or cousin of an angel. I would just like to know, wouldn't you sometimes? What if God just whispered to you, I've heard your prayer? Well, that'd be enough, wouldn't it? Yeah, just to know you've heard. Your prayer's been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son. And you were to call him John. And John's going to become a famous John. He's going to be John the what? John the Baptist. This is how the whole story begins. And he will be a joy and a delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth. For he will be great in the sight of the Lord. He is never to take wine or other fermented drink. And he will be filled with the Holy Spirit even before he's born. Story continues. Many of the people of Israel he will bring back to the Lord their God. Why would John the Baptist have to bring them back to the Lord their God? Because many in Israel had abandoned the Lord their God, and they had good reason to do so. God hadn't done anything for Israel in 700 years. It was over. It was a myth. It was fun while it lasted. They were interesting stories to tell their children, but the God of Israel had long abandoned Israel. Many of the people, and he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah, who is an Old Testament prophet, to turn the hearts of parents to their children, and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. And then look at this. And Zechariah asked the angel, how can I be sure of this? Now he gets very diplomatic here, men. Check this out. I am old. I am an old man. And my wife... gotta love the Bible. And my wife is well along in years. Okay, I'm old, and she's, I don't know if anybody's gonna hear about this. You know, these things get written down, I hear. So my wife is well along in years. In other words, he says to the angel, okay, I'm with you. I'm so glad you've heard our prayers, but I'm thinking you're a little late. We've been praying since we were 20. We've been praying since we were 30. We even went ahead and just for the heck of it prayed through our 40s. We almost quit praying in our 50s. And now I'm old. And my wife, she's old too. And the angel said to him, I love this. What do you mean, how do you know it's going to happen? I'm Gabriel. I'm an angel. You're talking to an angel and you're wondering how in the world this can happen? I'm Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God. And I have been sent to speak to you and to tell you this good news. And now you will be silent and not be able to speak until the day that this happens, because you did not believe my words, which will come true. And this is my favorite part of the story, which will come true at their, let's just say this together, appointed time. Wait. You mean God has had this day marked on his calendar? Mm-hmm. You mean all these 700 years and since the glory days of David and Solomon, God has waited this long on purpose? Mm-hmm. You mean God has watched his people abandon him in droves because it looked like there's no way in the world the nation of Israel will ever bless the world? We have no platform to bless the world. We're just another people that are conquered every time a new conqueror comes along. And God has been planning this all along. There was an appointed time. You mean God had not quit paying attention? He's not only heard my prayers, but the prayers of his people for generations? Yeah. You mean even though God has been so quiet, he's not been inactive, he hasn't lost, you know, interest? No. At the appointed time. Meanwhile, the people were waiting for Zechariah and wondering why he stayed so long in the temple. This wasn't like a long ordeal. He's supposed to do his deal, come out. They all go about their business and they're waiting and waiting and waiting. When he came out, he could not speak to them, and they realized he'd seen a vision in the temple, for he kept making signs to them but remained unable to speak. And when his time of service was completed, he returned home. After this, his wife Elizabeth became pregnant and for 5 months remained in seclusion. The Lord has done this for me, she said. In these days, he has shown his favor and taken away my disgrace among the people. But that was just the warm-up act. That was just the pre-concert concert. That was just the conversation before the conversation. This was just evidence that God was gearing up to do what God had planned to do all along. Planning to do what those who had remained faithful generation after generation after generation after generation, who had died and never seen fulfillment of the promise, but passed on to their children the hope. Passed on to their children the hope that Messiah will come. Passed on to their children the hope that God may be silent right now, but God is active. That God is a God who keeps his promise. And in every generation in Jewish life, there was a remnant of children who believed, and they grew up believing, and they passed it on to their children. And finally, the day had come when God would put into action what he had planned to do since he made the promise to Abraham that every nation on the earth will be blessed. And here's how the story concludes, and here's how our next story begins. In the 6th month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David, and the virgin's name was Mary. This is our story, isn't it? This is our dilemma, isn't it? Do we stay or do we go? Do we believe or do we stop believing? Do we serve or do we just go do something else? Do we give or do we just spend and know that there's nothing to life but what we see around us? Do we stay engaged? Do we stay in that difficult marriage or just do what everybody else is doing? Do we do the shady deal or do we continue to maintain our integrity and we drive home thinking, why am I maintaining my integrity? Nobody cares. Nobody's promoting me. Nobody's even noticing. They laugh behind my back because I'm a Christian and I have standards, and they wonder what the heck I'm doing it for. And you know what? I'm beginning to wonder what I do it for. And you're a student. and you're just not going to cheat. And everybody cheats. And you wonder, why don't I cheat? Nobody gets caught. I won't get caught. Why am I so narrow? Why am I so conservative? Why am I always wondering what God thinks? In every generation, there is a remnant of Christians that decide whether or not they will remain faithful in spite of the fact that they see God do seemingly nothing for them in the meantime. And the good news is this. If that's your situation, there's nothing wrong with you. If that's your situation, welcome to the common experience of those who've placed their faith in Christ and have decided to follow him in spite of what they see around them. Welcome to the world of Zechariah and the world of Elizabeth, to a couple that decided we are going to walk blamelessly before our God in spite of what we see, in spite of what people say, and in spite of the fact that we can't even imagine how God would either give us a child, and we can't even imagine how God would use the nation of Israel to bless the world when we're nothing but another occupied Roman territory. That's the dilemma that all of us will face or are facing in our walk with God. And the good news is, it's normal. The challenge is, will you be part of that remnant? The challenge is, will you be that unique student, that unique teenager, that unique college student, that unique couple that decides we're going to battle this out, we're not walking away? That unique person in the marketplace that says, I'm going to maintain my standards and I'm going to maintain my integrity, because at the end of the day, I want to know that to the best of my ability, I am blameless before God, whether I see God do anything on my behalf or not. And Christmas, the story of Christmas, is a reminder. It's a reminder that your faith in God is not misplaced. It's a reminder that even when God is silent, that God is not necessarily still. And when it seems that he's still, it's not that he's uninterested. And even when we're convinced that he's uninterested, it has nothing to do with his plan for the world or for you. It's a reminder that God can do anything he chooses to do. It's a reminder that God pays attention and is moved by and is blessed by those that remain faithful. But best of all, the story of Christmas is a reminder that your faith and your hope is not in vain. The song that we sing around this time of the year, O Holy Night, was written a long time ago. The lyrics were actually written by a French poet. And I love this line in the song, and it so captures the idea of this message. Long lay the world, long lay the world. For hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, long lay the world in sin and error, and here's a word we don't use anymore, pining, which means longing, praying, waiting. And Christmas is a reminder that our longing and our waiting and our agonizing is not in vain. Your faith in God is not misplaced. God is the God who keeps his promises when it seems like his promises are absolutely impossible to keep.
Thanks so much for listening to Your Move with Andy Stanley. We hope today's podcast will help you make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. So check out our website at yourmove.is for additional ways to watch, download, and share this message. Now it's your move. Do something with what you've heard.